Here come the hot stepper,
murderer.
I'm the lyrical gangster,
murderer.
Big up the crew in the area,
murderer.
Still have it like that,
murderer.
No, no, we don't die.
And yes, welcome to Cody and Gold, Jay Binkley with JT Noah. Drew Nixon was at the Wisconsin game last night. I don't know where Cody and Gold are at this point. I'll see Gold tomorrow for football for sure, so that'll be fun. But good morning. Text line again not working today, by the way.
Boo!
Dusty filled you in on that. It wasn't working last night either. We could have used it. We could have used it during that
Missouri
game.
What did you do last night to break it, Vink?
Well, just, you know, I didn't have any text line. I missed them. I actually missed the text line. It was fun, especially during live football. You know, you get live reaction. Live instant reaction to the games, JT. Could have had it during the Missouri game. I know you watched it last night.
Absolutely. You know, if you missed a text line so much, you could tweet out your number. You would get it.
No, we're good on that.
Oh, you're not doing that? Okay.
We're good on that. But you had to enjoy the Missouri game last night.
Yeah.
It went just as well. I mean, when you play an FCS team, you never know. FCS teams sometimes stand up and give you a good game.
I was,
they have a little bit of pride. They were 6-6 last year, 500 Central Arkansas. Occasionally they do step up, but you never know what to expect in game ones.
Well, the biggest issue I had with game one was injuries. You're always concerned about injuries in preseason, and last night there was no different. You didn't even get to see Sam Horn play. He had one play, and he hurt his knee, and he was
That's unfortunate. That sucks,
leg.
Man. Yeah. That sucks. I was pulling for the kid, man.
And then you had Blake Craig, the kicker, who has a leg on him, got injured making a tackle on one of the kickoffs. So, yeah, it was a good night score-wise, and you won the game, but you lost a kicker, and I know you have a freshman kicker that can kick the ball pretty well, but Blake Craig was going to be probably the best, if not the best or number two best kicker in the league in college football this year.
It's hard to follow Mevis, you know, with Harrison's. It's tough to
kicker,
follow.
Kicker.
But I told you about this true freshman, man. This kid's no joke. He was ranked 13th nationally. This kid can punt too. I mean, if they have to rely on him. But, you know, Craig is so reliable. Former Liberty North product, so that was good to see. But the injury sucks, man. We don't know what the official update
on him
is. Yeah,
they said, I saw PowerMizzou.com. tweeted out that they're both getting MRIs today. Whether we get word of how the MRI goes today is up in the air, but they are supposed to get both of them. Sam Horn and Blake Craig are getting MRIs today at Mizzou.
So now you've seen K-State, you've seen KU, you've seen MU, KU tonight against Wagner, FCS. Everybody's playing FCS this week. KU's playing FCS, K-State's playing FCS tomorrow in North Dakota and Missouri. K-State ought to be pretty pissed, to be honest with you. I would hate to be North Dakota this weekend. It's not North Dakota State. It's North Dakota going against Kansas State. That's much, much different. But Missouri gets game one out, and now it's Kansas week. Kansas week for the Missouri Tigers. Bo Pibrula, great debut for Missouri. I always thought he would win the job. Anyway, you hate to see him win it, you know, by injury. Because Sam Horn, they were going to implement him in the offense, which is funny because Bo Pibrula was used as that running quarterback at Penn State when he was there. But they, you know, they like Sam Horn's wheels and what he can do. But unfortunately, he was hurt in that game, and he was going to take over the second half. They were going to save Ahmad Hardy to use for Sam Horn a lot in the second half because it was going to be handoff after handoff. And he looked good. Louisiana Monroe running back that led the Sun Belt in rushing looked good for the Tigers. That's going to be a quarterback battle, man, between Bo and between Jalen Daniels. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Also, I think it's interesting. We want to see, like, which team's got the best resume and who's going to be better. It's hard to figure out what Mizzou's going to do come next week against Kansas because you played, like you said, FCS. And I actually am really concerned at the beginning of this offensive line problem that the Missouri Tigers had in the first half. I mean, you have Caleb Green, who is a guard, moved to tackle, and he was getting beat in the first half. Now, he settled down in the second half, but
he looked rough at the beginning, and that's one of the best linemen in the country.
Right, but you're taking him from guard to tackle.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if he how he does against, I would say, way better opponents on the defensive line. It'll be an adjustment, and I bet Drink will get after it with them. But I'm so excited for next Saturday. I cannot wait for it to happen. 2:30 in Como. Oh, I'm so pumped.
Missouri v. Kansas. They'll play again next year in Lawrence. Then you have to wait all the way until 2031.
Don't remind me.
31 and 32. This is the fourth oldest rivalry in college football. They need to do this thing every year. I know it's in Lawrence next year, but then to, you know, not have it in 27 and 28 and 29 and 30. Come on, man. I mean, you're wet and whistle right now with Missouri and Kansas, and you're not going to get it for a while. Kansas, you're going to see a resurgence here with Lance Leipold. You start seeing it there in the beginning with the bowl games, taking a step back last year. Of course, close games for Kansas. But they did beat three ranked teams down the stretch. But as far as Missouri is concerned, they win 61-6. They have the transfers that came in, of course, did well for them as well. Ahmad Hardy led them in rushing with over 100 yards. And then you had Kevin Coleman that came over from Mississippi State. Real productive year there in the return game and the receiving game. And then on defense, you got to see sacks from the Missouri Tigers defense. And a lot of that was led through the transfer portal as well, because I was really, really pleased. When Darius Smith, of course, was hurt last year. He comes over from Georgia from the year before. And then you see them get to the quarterback. It was fun to see. It was a good game. You quickly turned your attention to the Nebraska-Cincinnati. Oh, Damon Wilson, by the way. Damon Wilson, two sacks. He comes over from Georgia as well as Missouri. Hit that transfer portal hard, and why wouldn't you? If it's available, used to be the JUCO route. You know, teams would really roll up on the JUCO players and getting them into the system, and now it's about going to the transfer portal. Why not? Use it while it's there.
Yeah, take advantage of it. It's like a free agency market. Go out there and get some players, and Drink has really done a good job of bringing in transfers and recruiting. I know Sam Horn got hurt, and that was devastating, but we also got to see the true freshman Zollers get to play in the second half some bit, so that was pretty exciting
to
as
see
well.
Him play, but it was all between Bo and Sam Horn.
Yeah.
Sam Horn, of course, was drafted by the Dodgers last year.
So, and he signed a contract.
$500,000 with
the
Dodgers.
So that's nice. But
I'm sure they're freaking out about this injury, too, because it was about, don't get hurt, and then he goes and gets hurt.
On the very first play. I was like, really?
And he just recovered from Tommy John.
Yeah. It's tough.
I hate seeing that from him, but Prabula is fun to watch. And when he was at Penn State, he led a comeback there against Wisconsin. He ran the ball quite a bit for Penn State. He was in different packages, but he got screwed, though, with the transfer portal because he had to, quote, because when Drew Aller says he's going back to Penn State, he had to make a decision of what to do. And James Franklin gave him his blessing, which is good that a head coach, because they actually used him, and Penn State made the playoffs, but he was unable to play in the playoffs because he was transferring to Mizzou. But you understand why he did it, because the transfer portal is stupid. When teams that are making the playoffs, they couldn't do it as far as hit the transfer portal. He had to make a decision, and this was his decision to go start. A little bit surprised. It was a quarterback battle. I always thought he would win it, to be honest with you. But to be honest with you,
did you even think it was a quarterback battle?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Sam had played well in the spring or in the summer camp as well. But you always look at who actually started the game. I think that did matter in who started the game. When you saw that come out and Prabula was going to be a starter, you probably knew that that was probably the direction they would go. And they did. But Kansas State got what they did last weekend, which, of course, was losing in Ireland, lost a home game in Manhattan to Iowa State to play in Dublin, Ireland. It was a terrible field. I don't know if you watched that game, but terrible rainy storm.
Oh, yeah,
couldn't
I watched
see
that
the
game.
Lines.
Come on now.
I mean, it was a sloppy game, but you see this a lot. You see a lot of sloppy games the first week in college football. It's why a lot of teams will play the Central Arkansas. It's why a lot of teams will play, you know, FCS teams and don't play a ranked top 25 team right off the bat. That's why Ohio State and Texas. I give them props. I give props to LSU and Clemson. I give props to Alabama and Florida State. I give props to these teams that play tough teams right off the beginning because there's no preseason in college football. It's go time, man. And you see how sloppy preseason football can be.
Yeah,
in the NFL.
And people are like, oh, this is bad football. I'm like, it's actually kind of like a preseason game for these two teams that are playing that have not played all offseason. Like, this is the first time some of them are hitting other people outside of their own school. And so when that happens, you're going to see a mess up happen. And then you have the field and conditions that were happening over in Dublin. It's going to make it look like a really crappy game. In reality, it's just two teams battling out there trying to win a game. And it was really a fascinating game to watch. It was a close game, and it came down to a fourth down play where K-State couldn't get the stop.
I think Kansas actually played the best opponent. I'm not calling Fresno State great, but the fact is I think they were better. Well, I mean, obviously Iowa State
I was about to say Iowa State.
Iowa State's better than that. But Fresno State, I mean, listen, man. They have Kurt Warner's kid as a quarterback. Kansas handled them. And typically Kansas would lose those games. But Zimborowski at offensive coordinator, it was just a creative offense. I mean, they had the triple option going, and they were throwing the wheel route and stuff like that. But, you know, this was a bowl team last year in Fresno State. We'll see what they do against Wagner tonight. Can they keep it inside and not be looking at Missouri over their shoulders?
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think it helps that they are playing Wagner. So I would think they might have a slow start, but Lance Leipold will have them going early after that. Like, hey, you know how the Chiefs sometimes start slow in a game? I feel like that's what Kansas could do tonight, but then they pull it out and put it on Wagner. So, yeah, I don't see it being an issue tonight.
Well, it was fun seeing all the college football games. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh State, Division II, a lot of Pittsburgh State fans are in. They lose to Ferris State. Hey, they're playing 1-3-5, Kramer. 1-3-5 to start the season.
UCM also lost on the road last night as well.
It's tough. It's tough games. But college football was a pound last night. You get high school football going tonight. The big news this morning, the breaking news this morning from Preps KC, Rockhurst moving down to Class 5, which is weird because tonight they play St. Pius, and St. Pius used to be Class 2. And, of course, they keep growing and growing and growing. So it's a Class 5 matchup between St. Pius and Rockhurst in Kansas. You have to wait until next week because people migrate out on Friday night for high school football.
I will say, Binkley, that still I get Northwest lost, but we would still beat UCM and also Pitt State any day, every day when it comes to football.
I doubt that would be the case, Kramer. But the one good news is Pittsburgh State used to play Northwest Missouri State at Arrowhead. And that was always fun. Even the Armageddon series, and Carrington's got that documentary about the big game. It was at Arrowhead, 1-2, Missouri and Kansas, that'll come out this week. And, you know, they've played at Arrowhead. 2002, you guys probably don't remember because you're too young, you're Tide Pod Eaters. But 2002, Florida State, they played Iowa State in the Eddie Robinson kickoff classic. It was at Arrowhead Stadium in 2002. Bobby Bowden, third-ranked Florida State Seminoles, came to Arrowhead Stadium and played. And to me, it sucks that it stopped after that. I mean, it was cool because Kansas State played Iowa State at Arrowhead and all that. But that Kansas City Battle Sports Classic last night, Cincinnati, Nebraska, you just knew Mahomes' wheels were spinning as far as having Texas Tech play in this game, didn't you, JT? You knew by seeing Mahomes up in that box. Mahomes is there. Karloftis is there. Trey Smith was there. A bunch of Chiefs were there. Of course, there's a connection with the coaching staff and kids that play there. Neil Smith's kid plays for Nebraska. A lot of connections between the two. And, of course, the Kelsey brothers went to Cincinnati. Taylor Swift was there. I mean, it was Brady Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes. But you knew Patrick was probably wondering how to get Texas Tech in this game next year. And I would not be shocked if Texas Tech played in this game next year.
Well, I understand why you would want him there. But do you think it's still kind of funny how that was a Cincinnati home game and you knew it was going to be 90-10? At least 90-10 Nebraska fans to Cincinnati.
Well, they had to know it. They had to know it. The Nebraska fans have been screaming for – you know, closer road games, you know, to go to besides, you know, going out to Rutgers and things like that, just something drivable. And I-29 was packed starting about 11 a.m. and noon from, you know, people coming down from Nebraska. They infiltrated the city, the restaurants, the shops. I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce thanks the University of Nebraska. They spent their money in hotels. It was a great thing. It was fun to see Nebraska fans all over the place. It was fun to have this game at Arrowhead. Cincinnati knew what they were walking into, but they took it because of what? They took it because of money. Supposedly, they made about $6 million for this game. Lucas Oil originally offered to have this game, but they were only going to get like $2 million. But you come to Arrowhead, then the ticket sales, and thanks to Nebraska fans, I think they're $5.5 to $6 million Cincinnati pocketed having this game in Arrowhead Stadium.
Oh, yeah, it's all about the money.
But the one thing is, have a local team involved. Have K-State play somebody else, you know, another conference. You could have Arkansas come up and play. You'd have all the Arkansas fans come up here. Missouri coming down and playing somebody. I just think having these games, you would definitely like to see Missouri and Kansas, you know, play at Arrowhead again. That would be fun. Instead of that's why they had to put this game, honestly, instead of going Columbia and Lawrence, do something like that. But this kickoff classic was fun, and hopefully they continue to do this. And I'm sure the Chiefs, as they've branched out now and want to do more of the concert series and things like that, which they've been pretty active in as far as having other events at Arrowhead Stadium, the tractor pulls, the things they've had at the stadium, this is something they could do. Because they're not going to get a bowl game. It's not going to be here. It's typically in warm weather climates. Although, you will see Idaho host a bowl game. Pinstripe Bowl in New York. That's cold weather. Fenway has the Fenway Bowl, cold weather game. So there are bowl games that are in cold weather climates. But for Kansas City getting a kickoff classic, this is what to do. Maybe you're not a big Nebraska fan. That's fine. But it was in Arrowhead Stadium, and that was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to have that and all the Chiefs there and, you know, whatever, but Nebraska brought the people. You could have Iowa in this game. You could have so many, like, regional teams play somebody else. Oklahoma could come up and play them because, you know, their fan base would travel as well. But this should be an everyday, every year staple, and I think it'll start being that.
Yeah, I think it'll be a every year staple, especially with the Chiefs being so popular, Arrowhead wanting to be more of it, and especially if you're building a new stadium, then you're going to want to have those showcases games for the college football. So I think this was the beginning of a new thing happening for Arrowhead, whether it be the old one or the new one.
And they've done it before, but this was really well done.
Yeah, it was great. The atmosphere was electric. The only thing I would say that I did not like was an 8 o'clock kickoff. I thought that was a little late for being a central time.
TV times, my friend.
I know. I mean, you saw the Boise State-USF game had to start at 4:30 our time so they could get to it.
And Boise got rolled.
And they almost still were late to getting to the kickoff because of how bad Boise State was getting beat by USF. So
I was fine with it. It was cool. It was cool to have that kind of game at Arrowhead Stadium. Weren't ranked teams, I get it, but it was a sloppy game. I don't think either team played extremely well in that game, to be honest with you. It could have gone either way.
Do you think either team has potential to do big damage this year?
I can see Nebraska being better off than Cincinnati this year, to be honest with you. But you're going to get sloppy games, as I said, in game one. It's just going to happen. The teams aren't going to look as crisp on offense, usually defense ahead of the offense at this time. So I'm not shocked at all how the game went, because you look at when it was played. It was played, you know, first game of the year, first game of the year, first opponent for these teams. Dylan Raiola, the quarterback of Nebraska, he's not doing anything to get off these Patrick Mahomes, you know, wannabe rumors, because that tunnel walk that he had into the stadium, you know, getting the escort down there, I mean, why did he need to do that? The sunglasses, the haircut, even though Patrick's changed his hair at this point, and Dylan probably didn't want to do it right away. He says he's had his haircut longer. I don't think that's the truth. But he jumps before the game like Mahomes in the hand gesture, man. The hand gesture, give me the play in. And you wave the hand gesture, just like Mahomes. That was Dylan. But that was the big story online last night, was how Dylan wants to be Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, the Halloween spirit, Patrick Mahomes is what we'll call him, Dylan Raiola. But yeah, I mean,
man, it gets just be yourself, man. Be your own dude.
Yeah, don't try
your
to be someone.
Your dad's a legacy there.
Because if you try to be Patrick, then everyone's going to want you to have the numbers like Patrick. And let's be real, last year was not a good year for him. He started off hot, and then the adjustments happened on defense, and he couldn't comprehend it. He was lucky last night. There could have been a pick six. The defender dropped it on that fourth down play late in the game. They drop it, and so I think Nebraska is going to be better off. But I think
Nebraska is a better team.
Yeah, Nebraska is a better team. But I think all the hype around Raiola is because of his look and not his performances.
Yeah, I think that goes a long way to it. And you know, compared when he'd be out scrambling, late at scrambles, well as Mahomes and things like this. You heard those comparisons being drawn with. Anyway, that was that game last night. Of course, you have full slate of games tonight. Fun games. You got Colorado, Georgia Tech going, Auburn and Baylor going, Kansas and Wagner, and you have high school football in the state of Missouri. But the big news yesterday was something I do think involves the Chiefs. Micah Parsons being traded from the Cowboys to the Packers. Well, how's it involve the Chiefs? Well, Thanksgiving Day, man, 3 o'clock. Chiefs and Cowboys, they're not going to have to worry about Micah Parsons now. Because as Michael Lombardi, he was on the McAfee show yesterday, he calls him a Tuesday player. And he says, Tuesday, he wrote a book, and he has Tuesday, you worry about Tuesday players on Tuesday. Like you find out, you know who you're playing, you start worrying about that player on Tuesday, Wednesday, and it keeps building up until game time. But Micah Parsons, one of those dudes you worry about wrecking your offense, because he can clearly do that. But they don't have to face him on Thanksgiving Day. It'll be Dallas without Micah Parsons. And it's just funny with Jerry's press conference. That was really bizarre last night. His press conference went on during the night show last night. But Jerry Jones, man, I mean, he was at it last night.
When I offered Micah the contract that I offered him back in April, he flew in from out of the country, wanted to come right in. I said, no, we'll get you a night's sleep and come on in the next day. When I did that, we offered him a contract to come play for the Dallas Cowboys, and it was a good one, okay? Now, it was more guaranteed than what I've been reported that was here now. And, nothing in the world am I criticizing Micah about at all. That was every bit his right. And Micah's never been anything but so pleasant for me to be around. I want to be real clear about it, not that it implies that it's not. Things are good here. We have just decided that it was in the best interest of our team to take the consideration that we have. We appreciate his 4 years, but we can take that consideration and we can win in our minds more than had we gone the other route and signed him. That's not a negative on Micah. That's just, unique to our circumstances.
Were there any trade discussions prior to the draft regarding Micah?
Trade discussions with who?
With other teams regarding Micah.
No.
So
no.
Could you have done something then?
We had them. But we didn't have them with anybody else.
The draft's in April, by the way, when we were talking to Micah personally.
Right, it was at the end of the month. This was at the beginning of the month.
I got you.
Oh, you mean a day earlier or what?
Shit. You know, that's insanity right there with Jerry Jones. The one thing about it, too, is with Jerry, is they're not better. Yeah, you want to sell it as your team being better. It's like the Chiefs. You know, they get Carl Loftus deal done. You know, he's going to be a Chief and remaining, so you're not sweating it out. The Trey Smith deal's done. He's the highest paid guard in the National Football League. You don't want something like this hanging over your team. He is their best player. Like, Micah Parsons is the best player. Again, three-time All-Pro. He's their best player, and they're not exactly good. But Jerry thinks he can use some of those picks. So they're going to have four first-rounders now because of their two, plus the Packers two in each of the next 2 years. So that's four. You could package that for somebody else. We can package it for. You already paid your quarterback. You made Dak your guy. You're paying Dak. You made him your guy. So what are you going to do? And here's the thing. Five of the last 6 years, the Packers have drafted in the 20s. So you would expect the Packers. Packers are a decent team. They're turning that corner. Jordan Love there and Micah Parsons, they're going to be picking in the later 20s. Like, I think Green Bay is actually going to have a good year. And because of Micah Parsons, I think that's going to increase the draft pick to be a later pick for the Green Bay Packers because he's there and he makes that team even better. So if you're getting a pick in the late 20s, listen, yeah, they're still worth something, but nowhere near worth like a top 10 pick. Not even close to that. So you're not getting that with Green Bay. Now, yourself, the Cowboys might have a top pick because I don't think they're going to be very good this year. But the Packers, you're not exactly getting a great draft pick. You could look at like Laramie Tunsil's compensation, even though there's first-rounders weren't involved. But draft pick compensation, Jay Cutler, you go back to those deals.
Khalil Mack,
you go back to some of those deals. They didn't get a home run. Yeah, they got Kenny Clark and started on defense. That's fine because they won a tangible player that played right away for them. But Chiefs fans, they would go insane if this would have happened in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I think the bigger issue that I have more about the trade than anything is, A, you didn't listen to any other people or teams' trade talks, but also you traded him to a in-conference rival. You traded him to the Packers, who you're helping now beat you. You play them in week four. You haven't had a...
Sunday Night Football's going to be fun, right?
Oh, that's going to be entertaining. But it's also like, you can't beat the Packers, so hey, you know what? We can't beat you, so we'll give you our best player as well. So here, have a shot at that. So you're helping. I was expecting him to get traded to the AFC. I was like, oh, great. He's going to get traded to the Bills or the Ravens or something like that.
Now, that would have sucked. That would have clearly sucked. Oh, yeah. That would have affected you a lot more.
Oh, well, yeah.
Where he went's fine.
Right, right. He stayed in the NFC. I'm totally happy with it. I'm just shocked the Cowboys traded him to the NFC, an NFC team.
You know who should have been aggressive on this? I said this last night. But they weren't because they're cheap. They're a cheap organization. The Bengals should have done this. They got Trey this year. They gave him that raise of $14 million this year. It's a one-year deal still. They haven't worked anything long-term with Trey. I doubt it gets done, to be honest with you. He's been happy for the last 2 years. You had Micah. You had him for your future. And you have Joe on the offense and Ja'Marr Chase. The Bengals should have done this. For a team that was so bad defensively, because Sam Hubbard's gone now, so it's just Trey Hendrickson on the defensive line. And they've missed the playoffs the last 2 years, even with Trey Hendrickson, that's led the NFL in sacks the last 2 years. He led everybody last year, but T.J. Watt, he was second to him the year before. But the last 2 years combined, he's got more sacks than anybody. They should have been aggressive. You know why? They haven't been great in the draft either in the first round. They still have the highest amount of draft picks, by the way, on their team in the last 3 years, the 73.5%, just a hair above the Kansas City Chiefs, but not winning with it. But can you imagine him with that team? The Bengals are a team that signed their number one pick, their first-round pick, dead last in the NFL last 2 years. 2 years ago, Amarius Mims, last first-round pick signed. Ja'Marr Stewart, I was shocked they even got him signed. Remember that? I didn't like Ja'Marr Stewart anyway, but the bottom line is, can you imagine the Bengals had they been proactive and done this? Because this would have made more sense for them. Not only that, might have been a better draft pick because who knows how good they're going to be with this defense. They need more things for this defense, and that would have made the most sense, but they're cheap. And that would have really hurt the Chiefs, right, if he goes to the Bengals? But don't you agree that that should have been a team proactive in this deal?
Well, they would have been if they're not so cheap. But if you're not going to pay Trey, then there's no way you're going to trade. If you weren't going to pay Trey, there's no way you were going to pay Micah. And
It's cheap, and they shouldn't be cheap. The window's open as long as you have Joe.
Right. And that's why I actually like the Packers' move here. You have a young quarterback who isn't really getting paid like a high dollar amount. Your window is still open with him, so go out there and you make a trade. Now you have a player on the defense to do something, while the Bengals are like, you know what, we're just going to pay our offense and we're going to score 100 points and just outscore you because our defense ain't going to stop anyone. I haven't looked at the schedule, but I wonder if the Cowboys and Bengals play each other again this year, because that game is probably going to be the first to 75.
Well, here's the problem though. The $55 million Jordan Love's getting, and the 47 for Micah per year. NFL salary cap went up to $279 million. You got two players now on that team making $100 million. You have two players on the team making a third. Out of the 53-man roster, they have two players making a third of that. That could be dangerous. That's win now mode when you have two players making that kind of money.
And I mean, win now mode, that's fine, but you got to prove it. So I mean, their Super Bowl odds to win it went from 20-1 to 14-1. So obviously, Vegas is seeing some moves with them. But I think they're the clear favorite now to win the NFC North. I think they're over the Vikings and the Lions. The Vikings
have some issues at wide receiver and everything. Of course, they had them Thielen trade. I'm not wild on that.
And the Lions, I just don't know how they're going to do with losing both coordinators, offense and defense. So I would say
Ben Johnson can be a big loss for them.
Yeah, I think the Packers should be the clear favorites for the NFC North, but we'll see. If I had to put money on it right now, I think the Packers probably get to the NFC Championship, and they probably would lose to the Eagles.
Yeah, we'll discuss that later. But you won't get to see them play the Chiefs on Thanksgiving Day.
That's good news. Okay. That's good news. That's great news.
Not going to see Micah. Not going to see Micah when you're eating your turkey. Not going to see Micah Parsons. Because that was really the one worry you would have, that guy with the offensive line kind of exposed. I'm sure that the Chiefs offensive line was very happy to see this move.
Oh, I bet so. I bet they went and got a nice dinner.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Eagles are going to wax them on opening day. That's less than a week away right now. And the Chiefs play a week from today. So we're in the game week now as the Chiefs play in Brazil. Coming up next, we'll talk to Kimmy Checks from NFL Network. She was also the Chiefs sideline reporter through the preseason. We'll get kind of a national perspective. Well, we'll talk about this Micah Parsons thing. There's a lot of things the Chiefs talk about as well. Next. Hey, welcome back to Cody and Gold here. Jay Binkley, JT Noah, producing the operation. Kind enough to join us now. Kimmy Checks from NFL Network. You saw on the sideline for the Chiefs in the preseason as we're less than a week away from the National Football League, starting with Thursday night's special game. What's going on tonight, Kimmy? Or this morning, sorry, Kimmy.
You got me here?
Yeah, I got you. You hear me?
I got you. Good morning, Jay.
How are you doing? Did you have fun with the Chiefs this preseason?
I swear I'm not just saying this as a Kansas City homer, but there is absolutely nothing better in my yearly schedule than preseason. We're so lucky to have such a good team of broadcasters for those preseason games, and the Chiefs just take such good care of us and really do give us invaluable insights in time with the players and the coaches ahead of the season. So it was incredible to spend the time, and now I'm ready for the season to kick off.
What kind of stuff did you learn from the Chiefs this preseason? Anything you didn't know?
I mean, it's funny enough, the stuff that I didn't know, I actually learned from The Kingdom, that docuseries that the Chiefs did alongside ESPN and Disney Plus and Skydance that's airing now. I feel like that's where I learned most of my information. But in terms of you know, historical things, in terms of this year's team, it really was just kind of a message of, you know, the guys do have a little bit of a bad taste in their mouth following the end of last season. And of course, there's new players, there's new guys that were drafted or guys that were picked up during free agency, a part of this team. But I think everybody in the Chiefs locker room this year, coaches included, understand that they want to come out stronger and kind of deliver a message to the world that they're still one of the most dominant teams, if not the most dominant team in football. And they want to start that right away in week one against the Chargers.
So was that kind of a theme? Because, you know, people see the Chiefs, you know, the Kingdom, the commercials and all that. But I was thinking when the Kingdom came out, you knew they were glad to do it because they let the camera crews come in there and do it. But they knew it would bring up, you know, the memories of the Eagles and the Super Bowl. It's like the Titanic. We know the boat's going to sink, but you still watch it. I always thought that would kind of spur them on a little bit too, you know, seeing that and knowing, you know, seeing that green confetti come down. But they seem to really be taking this to heart. I just noticed kind of a different attitude with this team this year.
It's 100% a different attitude. And, you know, again, a huge kudos to the Chiefs team, their PR team led there by Brad G. You know, it's really unusual for in the preseason, especially for you to get time with all of the stars for your pre-production meetings. And every single week we did get time with the guys. And the very first meeting we had, you know, when we were done, we all kind of looked at each other. We said, this is one of the most incredible opportunities in the world. We sat down with head coach Andy Reid. Then we sat down with Chris Jones. And together we sat down with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. So we were all like, holy cow, pinch me. You know, this is a meeting full of first ballot Hall of Famers. But following the availability and the private time we had with the four of those guys, we all noted that this was like a way more serious team. Chris Jones, especially, he is, in my, you know, estimation, he's like a big teddy bear. Because when you see him off the football field, he's the nicest guy in the world. He's full of personality. He's just a bubbly character. He was still kind. He was still bubbly. He was still himself. But he had a completely different tone about him. And it's as if, like, the stakes were higher. It was way more serious. It was way more reflective. It felt like he kind of would pause and think about what he'd want to say before just saying maybe the first thing that came to mind. And I never thought that was a bad thing with Chris, because he was always so genuine and you knew what you were seeing is what you were going to get. But it was so much more reflective. And I think that was one of my main takeaways, is that, you know, this team has been on top for so long, but that was such a horrific loss in such an uncharacteristic way that now they've all kind of taken a beat to reassess where they want to go this season. And offensive coordinator Matt Nagy, I think, had one of my favorite quotes of the entire preseason, where he said, we don't want to play reckless football. We just want to be relentless. And I think that relentless kind of nature is felt across the entire locker room and the entire organization right now.
Talking to Kimmy Checks from NFL Network, who's on the sidelines during the Chiefs preseason as well. And Kimmy, when you look at this team, can you draw any comparisons to when they lost to the Bucs in the Super Bowl? Because I'll never forget, like, Kelce after that game saying, well, like, I can't call the season a success because they didn't win at all. So they're getting to that point. There's a point where teams are just happy to get to the Super Bowl. And they weren't. And that's when I really saw the switch being flipped with the Chiefs. They weren't happy about that, Bucks. And they went back to the drawing board and, of course, won two Super Bowls since and gone to three since that moment. Can anything be drawn from that Buccaneers Super Bowl loss to this one?
Oh, yeah. And, like, you want to look at the Bucs Super Bowl loss to now. What did they go out and do the following year? They went out and they won. So, you know, what I think is going to be most interesting and the most kind of interesting comparison following that loss was actually they didn't win that next year. They went and won the AFC West, of course, again, but they lost in the AFC Championship to the Bengals. But the one-to-one comparison I made in seeing that loss was the restructuring of the O-line. They did the exact same thing when they had that 22-point loss to the Buccaneers. So obviously they went out and they drafted Josh Simmons, the left tackle. And then now they have a new starting left guard in Kingsley Suamataia, who beat out Mike Caliendo for that role. Caliendo now will kind of step into a swing situation with the twos. But they did the exact same thing because they saw that the O-line was a major point of contention in Patrick not having protection versus the Buccaneers and being able to push the ball down the field. So I think there's a lot of kind of similarities there of, like, following the loss, what's the main thing you go out and you do? You went and you restructured the O-line. But again, these guys are used to such a high level of play and a high level of success that winning is kind of all they know. Like, all Patrick's known in his career is taking the AFC West. If you look at, you know, some of these draft classes, like guys drafted in 2022, they know nothing except for winning Super Bowls, obviously, except for this year. So when you have such that high level of expectation, like not reaching that mountaintop is so jarring because winning has become the norm.
And the one thing, too, Kimmy, is when you think of this team and the direction they're going, the national perspective about them, and you work, you know, in the national scene, of course, with that. Kyle Brandt, I thought, was awesome yesterday on Good Morning Football, or a couple days ago, when he was talking about this football team and how, you know, people say, well, it's Lamar Jackson, it's Josh Allen, this, that, and the other. But it's always going to be the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, until they're knocked off. Why aren't people talking about them? You've probably seen it. I mean, people say, well, they don't get disrespected at all. I hear that from other markets. I'm like, nah, I don't think you're listening to it, because you do hear it. And you do hear that it's now Mahomes behind Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and all this nonsense. He's not even 30, Kimmy. He's got 17 postseason wins, number two all time. I mean, it's insane to me when I hear these things, but it does exist. Does it exist because people are tired of the Chiefs winning the thing every single year? Because it is so tough. We've seen so many teams get to the Super Bowl and then take five steps back, and the Chiefs just continue to get good. And it's almost like nationally, people want to say Mahomes isn't as good as other quarterbacks, even though these quarterbacks can't beat him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like it's a trend in the National Football League. I remember growing up as a Chiefs fan, I hated the Denver Broncos because they always won. You hated the New England Patriots because they always won. It's like your fandom kind of follows the most dominant teams. So, of course, while it's really annoying and you know, we've all heard the conversations that the Chiefs are paying off the refs and, you know, every other conspiracy in the world, I've yet to meet 31 billionaires, or yet to believe that 31 other billionaires would all sit in a room and say, you know what, we're going to give it to Clark Hunt. We're going to give it to you guys for this dominant run for as long as you want. You know, that's good for all of us. Of course, those things are really frustrating, but I think other teams are trying to figure out how the Chiefs have cracked the code. And of course, it starts at the helm. It starts with head coach Andy Reid. We're so lucky to have Patrick Mahomes leading the charge for that offense, have veteran leaders like Travis Kelce, who's been with this organization since the day that he was drafted. But it also goes down to the president, Mark Donovan, and the team that he's compiled, you know, across the executives with the organization. Of course, general manager Brett Veach, like all of these people have been put in place for the organization to thrive. And, you know, talking about Brett Veach and what he's just done in compiling this 53-man roster, like the amount of development and smart drafting that's gone into this organization is something that also I think goes overlooked often, because, you know, it's so easy to just say Patrick is the reason for the dominance of this team. And of course, he is one of the main factors. But we have drafted intentionally and really well in developing young players. Like, if you just look at the extension that Trey Smith just had, he just reset the market at guard. He was a sixth-round guy. I don't think he was on the radar of many other teams. Patrick Mahomes can't go and be great without Trey Smith. Right? Isaiah Pacheco, a seventh round guy. Like the offense wouldn't be great in the run game without Isaiah Pacheco. And he was someone who was not on anyone's radar. Like the reason why Kansas City is good is because they have one of the best front offices in football. And that starts with head coach Andy Reid, that starts with Mark Donovan, that starts with Brett Veach. Those three guys have infused so much success and intentionality into the organization. That's why it thrives. And other teams and fan bases can be upset at that, but they're winning because of their front office.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's time to look at that training staff, like you mentioned, you know, taking the chance on Trey Smith in the sixth round. Now, all of a sudden, he's the highest-paid guard in the National Football League. Other teams passed on him because of medical concerns in college. But the Chiefs and Rick Burkholder and the staff, you know, gave the green light to draft him, that he's going to be fine. They had a way to make it work, and it did work. And then they listened to the training staff again, obviously, with Simmons, because they brought him in for a top 30 visit, and they listened to us. So as important as Mahomes is and Veach and Andy Reid, this training staff now should get all their flowers.
Yeah, they should. And, you know, it's really interesting. So in the conversation with Josh Simmons, I went out to St. Joe. I went out to camp pretty early, And I was walking around with general manager Brett Veach and, you know, asking, hey, what's going on the left side of the line? Kind of talk me through things. And I was with Steve Smith Sr., my colleague for NFL Network. And it was the three of us chatting. We're like, hey, you know, how's Simmons doing? And he said, you know, they felt so lucky that he fell all the way to them at 32 and they were able to grab him. But of course, they didn't know, you know, how healthy he would be. They're hoping he'd be good to go by the start of the season, but they had no idea. He said they lucked out, and he was so dedicated to his training. He actually stayed in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had mini camp, they had OTAs. He didn't leave and go rehab elsewhere. He rehabbed in Kansas City alongside the team and their trainers, and they were shocked at his shape. They were shocked at how healthy he was and the fact that he had no slowing down following that knee injury, and he was ready to go. So you're right. I mean, the training staff has been incredible in getting these guys healthy and assessing the talent before they're even drafted so that they then can go be superstars. I think Simmons is going to be the franchise answer there on the left side, and they were lucky enough to get him where he fell. It's just another thing where the luck seems to be on the side of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Kimmy, I remember when you were in St. Joe for NFL Network, when you guys did all the camps and you were here for the Chiefs camp with Steve Smith. I am curious because I really like Steve's breakdowns about wide receivers. Obviously, I think he was an awesome receiver in the NFL. But his breakdowns on receivers are incredible. The things he does online about receivers. Did he tell you anything at all? Did he tell you anything at all about just watching the receivers just kind of, you know, maybe just mention to you or something when he watched the group of receivers? Anybody that really stood out to Steve?
He just noted kind of the speed of the guys and the fact that, like, this is a very, very young locker room with a lot of weapons. You know, there's guys who can spread the field. There are guys who can, you know, be a little bit more useful in those short chunk plays down the middle of the field. But he just noted, like, and I asked him, I said, you know, Kansas City had a 1,000-yard wide receiver, since Tyreek Hill back in 2021. In a lot of ways, the media has praised that, but then also in a lot of ways, the media has disparaged that for Kansas City. Like, what's your take on it? And he's like, you actually don't need that when you have this roster. He goes, there are so many options for the defense to be terrified of. They have to make a split-second decision on every single play because they know Mahomes could go chuck the ball, you know, 65 yards down the field. They understand that Isaiah Pacheco and even Kareem Hunt, following his season last year, can go just barrel roll their way through, you know, the defensive line and find those gaps and go off and split a run. You always have Travis down the middle who's going to be a threat and an option. He just really noted, like, they are so dangerous because they have a guy to check every single box. And I think because of, you know, the youngness of this roster, defenses really don't know how these guys are going to be utilized this year. There's not a clear one and two. There's a clear every option. And one of the other best things I heard this preseason is when we spoke with Juju. And Juju was talking about, you know, Patrick and what makes Patrick such a good quarterback, especially as a receiver, right? A receiver's best friend. He said, you know, I played with incredible quarterbacks during my career, but this is the only time when Patrick has gone through every single read. Patrick will go through and make eye contact, whether you're the one or you're the five. And he goes, the thing with Patrick is you always anticipate that the ball is coming to you, even if you're not the play called. Because he can improvise so well and because he's so talented on every single snap, you mentally think that you're the weapon that he's going to. And that's why you can see him spread the ball so incredibly efficiently. And I think it's going to be really dangerous for defenses to try to guard this season.
Kimmy, you're from here, so you definitely remember when Joe Montana was here. I actually watched that series on Montana on Peacock. And, you know, the one thing that stood out to me was, he was just a dude. We see all these quarterbacks, and you see all these quarterbacks going too, because you guys talk to him on the NFL Network all the time. But you have to be a dude, man. The teammates have to like you. And they liked Patrick right away, and it shows, man. You know, having Camp Pat down in Texas and playing video games, going out to eat with the guys. That's what Joe Montana did. Like, he was just one of the guys. You know, being a superstar like he was just down to earth and a guy. And I think teams are searching for that in the NFL. I mean, these guys can all throw the ball, they can run, they can do all these things, but it's that intangible about being down to earth and being a humble dude, and I think that's what they have in Patrick Mahomes, and you definitely know the ones in the league that have it and those that don't.
Yeah, 100%, and he's, you know, every single time I'm around him more, I'm just shocked at his humility, at his human side, his human nature. It seems like he never has a bad day or treats anyone with disrespect. And, you know, he's as equally talented on the football field as he is kind as a human being. I just think we're so lucky to have him in our organization. And he's easy to root for because you know how hard he works. But that, at the end of the day, he's a family man. He's a guy who's happy to be here. He's a guy who's leaned in the Kansas City community and wants to be a mainstay, not only in football, but a mainstay for everybody who loves the Chiefs. And I just think we're so grateful and so lucky to have him. And I just hats off to his parents and the entire team that's behind kind of his magic and the way in which he leans in.
Kimmy, great job at training camp. Great job covering the Chiefs all year throughout the preseason. Enjoy talking to you. And, you know, I know that, you know, working where you do, that you get the arrows from everybody because, you know, you're from Kansas City, right? And the Chiefs are on top. So you, of course, probably hear everything everybody's saying, and you do a great job with it.
Oh, you guys are great. Thank you. Nothing like Kansas City. Nothing like those Chiefs. I'm excited for the season to get started and hope they can get a W that first week against the Chargers. A week from today. It's crazy.
That's right.
A week
from today.
Officially back, guys.
Well, thanks, Kimmy. Good luck at NFL Network. Thank you.
Thanks.
There you go. Kimmy checks right there. Talking about Chiefs. And that is what reminded me when I watched. Have you seen that, JT?
Which one?
The Joe Montana series.
I have not actually.
It's on Peacock. I don't know. You're at that age now where you stream everything. So I'm.
Yeah, shy. I haven't. I don't really have Peacock, so I'll have to check it out.
You don't have Peacock?
Well, like I have it for
and
like
you're
the
in your
football
20s?
Season.
I thought I was
so
old,
many.
Man.
I pay for so many already. It's crazy.
I do too, man. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
I actually think I pay for Peacock. I just don't use it. It's probably on that, you know, that recycle where it's just auto pay and you never think you're paying for it.
But you remember when Joe was here, right? I mean, you were probably very, very, very small, or maybe not even born.
I was not born.
That's the same thing. But you remember it. I mean,
People talk about it. So, yeah,
I know
about it.
People talk about it. It was a big deal, man. The Chiefs made the AFC title game that year because they hadn't done it, you know, since Lynn Dawson won the Super Bowl. They finally made it in 94, January 94. Joe took them there, right?
Right.
It was a big deal. But he was a dude, man. He would sit there during the Super Bowl when he was with the Niners. They're playing the Bengals. And he'd look up in the stands and say, oh, there's John Candy. And in a crucial drive, he would try to calm everybody down. He would grab the linemen, go out to drink in River Falls when they had training camp there to Bozeman Mine. Drink beer with the linemen. He was a dude, man. He would screw with Neil Smith and tease him and do these kind of pranks and stuff like that. That's how you get – that's what teams are searching for, man. When they're looking for quarterbacks, they can all throw. Again, Jamarcus Russell could sit on his knees and throw the ball 80 yards. Like, these guys can throw the ball. They have the talent to do it. But they have to have the intangible. Tennessee found out real quickly with Will Levis, and I know he's hurt, but they got him in the second round, but they thought that was going to be their guy. Then quickly they said, screw that, and they went and got Cam Ward, you know, just right after that. But teams are always looking for that guy, and you got to find it, man. Like the Joe Burrows of the world, the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allens, because those teammates like these guys.
Right, that's what you want. That's what you want because then you'll have fun on the field and off the field.
Yeah, 100%. But that's exactly what he's got. I mean, it's no rhyme or reason. That's why Brock Purdy works in Frisco, you know, being a pick in the seventh round. His teammates like him. You know, it's the culture of what they have. But regardless, that was Kimmy Checks from NFL Network. We'll talk to Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs insider, joins Cody and Gold each and every week at 11 o'clock. We'll talk and see what's up with Josh next.